make a list of your priorities and your values. And if something checks the list, it's an easy yes. And if something doesn't, it doesn't. It takes away so much of that indecision and that anxiety around that second guessing of, did I make the right decision? Did I make the wrong decision? I did the best I can do in the moment. I'm doing my Hishtadlus, and that's it.
Welcome to LifeWorks, where we talk about life and work and making it work. I'm Hannah Greenstein, a From mompreneur on a mission just like yours, to live the mompreneur life that brings me feelings of balance and inner peace and joy. Here, I hold space for you in the many roles you play as a From mommy business owner. Join me for support, mindset, techniques, and tools around productivity, focus, and work-life balance so you can feel in balance and at peace. If you can find excitement and joy at work and at home, you will thrive in the roles you play and feel fulfilled by your life's work. And that's what I want for you. So let's get started. Welcome back to the podcast. If you listen to only one episode of LifeWorks podcast, let it be this one. Today, I had the tremendous pleasure of having a super fun conversation with Esther Kurtz. You might recognize her name from Mishpacha magazine or from her being a published author. Today, I brought her on to talk about something else, her podcast, Emunah for Non-Rebbetzins, and her personal Bitachon journey. She shared so much relatable insight and so much value and perspective on Bitachon and how it relates to us as, in Esther's words, non-Rebbetzins, normal women running businesses, taking care of kids, raising families, running homes. And she shared so much just incredibly transformative insight and ideas. And I think that of all the tools that we have in our toolbox, I know that of all the tools we have in our toolbox to change the way we feel about time, about our to-do lists, about overwhelm, about stress, about work-life balance, of all the ways that we can work on getting more present and more balanced, this is number one. And this is foundational work that we all must be doing. So enjoy this episode, listen to it, really allow it to impact you in the way that it has the ability to, and then go follow Esther's podcast. You can get it on WhatsApp, on Spotify, on Instagram, wherever you are, her podcast is there for you. So again, enjoy the episode. I would love to hear your feedback on this episode, and I can't wait to hear from you. Enjoy. I am so, so excited to have you here. Like, I actually got feedback from a listener that I don't talk about Hashem enough on the podcast. And terrible as this may sound, really? It's intentional. I don't feel qualified. I plan on doing a podcast episode about this, but I have this fear. You know, if I like give a productivity tip and it's horrible or you misinterpret it, worst case scenario, you know, like I wasted your time. Which I really don't want to do. But if I say something hashkafic that comes across the wrong way or you misinterpret, I feel like that's a lot of responsibility.
I hear. Yeah, for sure. Because I can definitely relate to that in that sense where I'm so nervous in how I present things because, you know, even though I give myself that whole caveat of I'm the non-Rebbetzin, but there's still that I am doing something hashkafic.
Right.
So it is very nerve-wracking to do that. At the same time, I think there's a need for people like me and people like you to be talking in this sort of language and not just leaving it to the Rebbetzins.
Yeah.
Because we need to talk to about it in a way that we relate to it. Not just the aspirational of when we hit that level, we'll be able to talk about it. But we need to be able to actually talk about and discuss it at our level.
Right.
I 100% hear your hesitation, but I think you should get over it.
Well, I have a podcast.
Because I think it's valuable.
That I want to, you know, like I want to record an episode where I like share this hesitation with everyone. I haven't been talking about this for this reason. And maybe it's time to change that.
Yeah.
It might not be the right thing. But okay, can you tell our listeners who you are, a little bit about what you do and how you got to where you are today?
Okay, very good question. I never know how to answer these because I have like 50 different identities depending on who I'm talking to and what I'm doing. But for today, hi, I'm Esther Kurtz. I'm here as the host of the podcast and the audio project Amuna for Non-Rebutans. How did I get here to doing this? It's a very, very good question. Basically, I hit crisis mode, which I think everyone has their own version of it. And you end up reaching out, or not the you, the I, you end up scrambling and looking for things to fix or sort out whatever it is you're going through. I ended up learning Chovas HaLevavos 5 minutes a day with my husband. I was also learning a sefer with my friend, Reb Moshe Shapiro's sefer on Yod Gimel Ikrim. And then I started attending Shiurim from Rabbi Akiva Tatz. Like, I was just like on spiritual overload. I was like, I need something to like anchor me back. And it helped. It was completely transformative in the best sense of things. And when you find something that really works for you, and especially in my experience as a writer, that's another one of my identities.
I was going to say,
you find that.
For those wondering, this is, you know, the Esther Kurtz from Mishpacha, the wacky science experiments you run.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, another one of my alter egos is as a writer. So, as a writer of writing a lot of personal essays, not the experiment part, but the part of, actually, it also shows up in the experiments as well. But if I'm struggling with something, if I have questions on how something runs, if I'm curious about something, we're so focused sometimes we think it's only us. And the more I write and the more I'm in the world, I realize that, you know, I'm not that unique after all. If I'm dealing with this, someone else is dealing with this as well. And this was something that was so transformative for me. I'm like, other people should have this too, you know? So it was originally conceived as I wanted to write a book because I'm a writer. So that was my initial idea. But then I quickly realized that who's going to read a book by me, because I write fluff, fun stuff. I don't write, you know, serious reverence and stuff. So no one's going to publish my book, and then no one's going to read my book. So how can I gain authority in something? So to be honest, when I started doing it, like when I first conceived it, I don't think I realized what I was signing up for, like daily podcasts. I did not realize. And then I actually turned it into daily videos as well. I realized what I was doing. I probably would have said no, because that's crazy. But, you know, Hashem has this funny way of doing things. And here I am, 146 days in, we're still doing this daily of
incredible.
These, you know, 90 seconds, 2 minute clips of Chovas HaLevavos. So that is the very, very brief nutshell of how I got to what I'm doing with this project.
It's incredible. And as someone who very avidly listens to these clips, like you said, it's a daily podcast. So it's every single day, a 90 second clip comes straight to my WhatsApp, super accessible, super consumable. And it's Chovas HaLevavos Shaar Bitachon. We all know we should be learning, and many of us aren't. And it's just, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible how much work it must take on your end, like you're saying. I can't imagine the workload. And it's incredible what an amazing work it is and journey it must be for you to be, because it's so much work, you are so immersed in it. I could listen and be distracted, like, to be fully transparent. You can. Like, you have
sure.
To be clear, you don't read the Chovas HaLevavos in the clips. You learn the Chovas HaLevavos, and then you talk about it in 90 engaging, down-to-earth, relatable seconds.
Right. It's basically, I'm trying to make it accessible for us non-Rebutans, because we are not sitting and looking at the actual text, because, that's not who we are. That's not what we do. I'll be honest about who we are.
Yeah.
So it's me going through, I actually have it right over here. It's always on my table because I always need it. You know, it's me going through seeing, okay, what's coming up, you know, and I've already learned through it already. So I know the concepts, but going through all the minutiae detail and realizing, okay, fine. You know, this is what has to be covered. You know, where should I do the cutoff point? Does this need an example? Do I need to clarify? Should I even mention the source for this? For the most part, you know, I'm not mentioning much Hebrew or the psukim that he mentions, because that's not my audience.
Yeah.
You know, we need to get straight to the point of we're non-Rebutans here. That's my whole point, that we could be very, very spiritual. But if you're a Rebutan, you would have opened up the safe for yourself and you don't need me. So it's just being, you know, super accessible in that sort of sense. In the beginning, it was crazy intensive of the workload, but I've come to a point where it goes better, you know, and I know how to approach it even when I do get stuck. But it is, you know, it takes up a nice little cute chunk of my day. Like last night I had a wedding. So I was like, okay, I need to prepare tomorrow, you know, today's last night. So I prepared the script. I write a script of it. And then I record it on for a podcast, and then I have to do a voiceover for the video, and I have to make the video. So I just wrote the script of it, and I planned out the seconds for the video, but I didn't actually do any of the recordings because then my kids came home and you can't record because it's way too noisy. Then basically I came home from the wedding at 12, and that's when I sat down to do recordings. And like, it's funny, like, I guess I know myself. If there's a deadline, I will meet it. And I didn't realize what I was doing myself when I put myself up to it, but meeting crazy deadlines, you know?
It's incredible.
That's what I did to myself. No editor did it to me.
Incredible. So you mentioned, and it has to be, that this has been extremely transformative for you. And I'm sure it's like on all fronts. But
yes.
Like, how would you describe the impact that this learning Covas Halvavos and learning it in such a way that you are learning it intensively to give it over has done for you?
Okay, so to say that it's transformative is lessened what it's done for my life. And it sounds so cliche, and I really talk like a Rebbetzin these days sometimes. And like, even like when I'll have a conversation with my husband, and I'll be like, I need to turn into my Covas Halvavos Rebbetzin. Like, don't kill me for like getting all Rebbetzin on everything that's going on in our life, because it shows up everywhere. But let me like take a step back and first tell you a little bit of like what type of personality I usually am. I'm one of those people that plans everything in advance, and I have to cheshbon everything out. I was the one who's sitting in like my college class. You're raising your head. Sitting in my college class thinking like, okay, this is before I'm dating, I'm married or anything like that. I'm thinking like, okay, so I'm in college now. I need to get a job that makes this much money because insurance costs this much money, and I can only pay this much in rent. Like, everything was calculated. I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to try. Like, it was all cheshbon. And with that, you know, there's a certain empowerment, maybe a sense of arrogance, but there's also a lot of anxiety that comes with that. Like, will this work? Can I do it? Will it happen? And the way I was always taught bitachon was just believe. You know, my mother talks the language of bitachon all the time. You know, Hashem will take care of you. Hashem will take care of you. Hashem will take care of you. But I'm not an emotional person like that. I'm much more logical, analytical. I don't go for the fluff emotion. It doesn't speak to me. I always had a more intellectual approach. So even though my mother was talking the language, it wasn't speaking to me because it wasn't the way that I understood it. So when I finally learned the Covas Halvavos, which I just assumed, I guess I had the assumption that like, what's the book going to tell? Repeat itself 5 times over, believe, 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 you know? I didn't even know what it entailed because I never really heard a different way of understanding it. Even all, we've very, very often been brought up on these supernatural bitachon stories, you know, where everything is happily ever after. And those stories also turned me off as well. Cause I'm like, cause life is, doesn't always, like, if something bad happens in my life, that means that, like, it just, things weren't adding up. And like, the whole thing just didn't go for me. You know, it didn't go with my mindset until you come to a crash point. You're like, I need to figure something out because what I'm doing is not working. So when I started doing Shar Bitachon, it really spoke to me because there's so much logic in there. There is so much psychology in there of like, this is how people act. So therefore, it's written back in like the 1000s, you know, he totally gets our current mindset. Like, people haven't changed an iota, and he totally gets our money concerns, the way we try to control things, the way we work ourselves within relationships and how we trust. And it's completely, oh my gosh, it chilled me out tremendously. Which has been, it changed the way, you know, I approach my writing. It changed the way I approach my jobs, the way I approach my parenting, the way I approach running my house. It changes everything. I can breathe, which I know I sound like a little nuts. And you're like, I would like for that to happen to you too. And it can happen. Like, sit and do it every day, which I think is probably the best approach to do it. Like, going through it daily, having that daily injection. But it has been completely transformative. You know, just to even talk about, you know, this is, your podcast is really about, you know, for mothers and business and entrepreneurship, which is such a challenging thing. You, very gratifying, but so challenging. So let me talk a little bit about my work journey, so to speak. So I was a high school English teacher for many, many, many years. Then COVID hit, things happened with the school, whatever it was. And I'm like, I'm leaving. I'm done marking endless essays. I can't do this anymore. I'm done. So I left teaching, and then it's like, okay, so what skill sets do I have? What can I do? So as a writer, you end up like turning around to like copy and those kind of things, and end up realizing I hate copy with a passion. I like marketing. I don't love copy. And I hated the running a business myself. the back end things. I just want to do the work. I don't want to do all the administrative, all the marketing aspect of things. You know, I don't want to self promote. It's just, it wasn't my skill set. You know, I'm going to be floundering on LinkedIn. I just, you know, like if you go through my LinkedIn, you know, history and just see all the change, and I was just like, it's a hot mess. It just is what it is. And then I had a job for working as a content writer for a year. And that, you know, a story for another time. This is coming in July. July, I don't have a job. I was working in, I'm trying to think when I started. Started with Chobas Salvados back in 2021. Probably, that makes sense. 2021. And then I'm trying to think what was going on that made me decide that now was the time. I think I just decided I need a new project. So I started once again floundering around and pushing, you know, seeing what should I do? I kept on having this question of like, what should I be doing now? I have this new insight, right? But it's part of you, you know, old habits die hard. And there's a certain like stress of like, okay, I need to be bringing a parnasa. I need to be doing this. I need to be doing that. So when people would talk about things, you know, in the workplace, they're like, oh, my job needs to align with my values and I need to do what's best for me. I always thought those people were not naive, but a sense of like, come on, you do the job that comes your way. You can't be so picky. You can't be so whatever it is, because this is the world. And at this point, I'm like, you know what? Parnassus is coming to me no matter what. I am going to be as picky as I want to be. I'm going to make a list of what is important to me and my values and what type of jobs I want to do, what type of jobs I don't want to do. I'm going to do this all the way. But then I had like a bunch of like, I was finishing up writing up my serial. I was like, I'll start looking for a job after that. I was like, I have this, you know, trip I was going on. I'm like, I'll go look for a job after that. So fine. All those things are done. Oh, in the meantime, I forgot. So somebody was trying to get me to do a different job. They were chasing after me. Chasing after me is not the word. And I just didn't feel like, you know, we were aligned hashkafically. They were more of like a hustle culture type person. And the money was so good. It was like literally $200 an hour. And I was just like, I'm not doing this. It didn't feel right. It was just, you know, and after I said no, he still came after me. And I'm like, I'm not doing this. And I didn't have any qualms. I was like, if I'm supposed to have the money, I'm going to have it. I'm going to have it. When you're doing the work, you don't feel that leap of faith that you're saying, wow. And I'm telling you, like, once you're doing the work, you don't feel that leap of faith. You feel like, nope, I'm not, you feel a certain sense of calm. So there was that. And then, so I finally was after like, way after Sukkot, it was November. When was this? It was probably like 3 or 4 weeks ago. I got into my head that I wanted to, I'm looking at like, once again, trying to figure out, okay, so what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What's my skill set? Someone said something about writing books. And I was like, oh, maybe I should write, you know, I should be doing ghostwriting for people's books. And part of me liked the idea like of not doing, I didn't want to do biographies because that wasn't my thing. I was like, I can do nonfiction. And I put out feelers and I got some good responses. But then I realized like, no, that I'm going to be like, I wanted to go back to writing as a creative thing and not as a job. You know, I wanted to be doing it on my own terms. Whatever, you know, if you spend too much time like writing, I feel like you lose all that creative juices for the stuff you really want to be doing. So that I was like, this is petering out. I'm like, this is, even if there was opportunities there, I'm like, this didn't feel right. No, you know, I'm not pushing here. And if it's meant to be, it's meant like people will come after. Like I felt so much more comfortable not chasing after thing and letting things come to me. As opposed to, you know, that other, you know, what I used to have, that anxiety hustle culture of like check off the list of I have to post on LinkedIn, I have to engage, I have to reach out to people, I have to, you know, all those haves that like really, really stress you out. And then I remembered a recruiter who I had a very good experience with. So I reached out to him and I figured, okay, fine. I reach out to a recruiter. I'll take a couple of weeks, whatever. You know what I mean? Like I sent him an email in the morning. He called me that afternoon. He's like, oh, I think I have a job thing. Basically, I had an interview lined up for, you know, he spoke to them. They wanted me in an interview right away, but they only had openings the next week. I had a job. Chick chock. It was done. I was like, what? Wait. And with everything, I was like super picky of like, I only want to be working these hours. I want these. And they were like, fine. And I'm like, really?
Wow.
I felt okay. You know, sometimes, especially when we come to the stage, we feel uncomfortable asking. Like we feel like we're asking for too much. You know, like I can't ask for this and for that benefit and for that. I'm like, no, this is important to me. I'm going to ask for it. And, you know, I got it. And it was actually really, really amazing. So my husband and I are avid budgeters. We have a spreadsheet and everything like that. And he was just looking at our P&L for 2022. And at the end of the, to see, you know, how much we made at the end of the year, blah, blah, blah. And we looked at like all the money that I had made from whatever it is. And it literally equaled from, for within a few hundred dollars, the expected salary for this job that I got now. Like, this is the money I was supposed to get. This is the same amount. And now I'm thinking like, I get to make the same amount of money without all the hustle, without the crazy deadlines, without the stress. It works. It works. We think it happens to other people. And I'm just like, I feel like I have to stress, like, I am so normal and so like, just like you kind of thing. You know, I'm a regular, you know, I fetch all the time. I don't want to make supper. My kids are running wild. Like, I'm not this anything. When you put in the work, it comes right back to you. And it's the most amazing thing. And I feel like particularly, you know, I tried the freelance thing and it wasn't for me. So I know what it takes to do it. And I don't have it in me to do it. But because it asks so much of you. But I think it's particularly for a freelancer and for mompreneurs, you need to have that amuna bitachon work. Otherwise, you're just going to run yourself ragged and be so stressed out because there is so much of that hustle going on there. And having that bitachon as like your BFF, it's just biggest chill ever. It's just so calming.
Unreal. Esther, you mentioned like a few things that I want to just highlight. First of all, when you shared saying like that experience you had saying no to a job and having no qualms about it, I think that like I have done a lot of this work before you launched your podcast, which I obsessively, like I said, listened to. I had done some of this work like in a little bit of a different, from a different approach, but also like this bitachon, you know, work. And I remember getting a phone call again, like someone wanted to hire me. And I think that as a business owner, what's super exhausting about taking on work that doesn't align or isn't the right fit or is going to bring you to that place of hustle is not even necessarily the work. I mean, the work itself is exhausting, but then there's also the, like the decision before, like, should I push myself? Should I take the extra babysitting? Should I work when my kids are pulling at my skirt? Or do I say no and do without the money? And then once you take the job, it's like all that self-doubt and all those questions again, like, what am I doing and how come it's like this and why are my clients? And more than the work itself, there is that. And I remember so clearly, I got this job offer. I was walking with my husband. Like I was like, I'm going to think about it later. It was like, should I, shouldn't I? I can't think anymore. I'll think about it later. We were out, we were going on errands. And it was like that moment of clarity where I was like, I will make the money I need to make and the money I'm supposed to make in a way that works with for me. And this doesn't. I remember I turned to him and I was just like, I'm saying no. He had no idea what I was talking about. He hadn't even known that the job was on the table. I was like, I'm saying no. He was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, it will come. And probably more, like again, more than the gift of not having to do that work that would pull me completely out of my boundaries was that ability to just say no with such clarity. It's so transformative.
Exactly. That like the pre-decision anxiety.
Yeah.
I think we forget about how sometimes like how anxiety inducing it is, how the indecision of like figuring out the balls and balances of what we should and shouldn't do. And I think when you're doing the Amuna Bitachon work, you can very easily make a list of your priorities and your values. And if something checks the list, it's an easy yes. And if something doesn't, it doesn't. It takes away so much of that indecision. And that anxiety around that second guessing of, did I make the right decision? Did I make the wrong decision? Right. No, I did the best I can do in the moment. I'm doing my hashtadlus and that's it. I'm done. You know? So it really, like I said, it chills me out tremendously. Just to share a very, very small story. This is way before I even started doing any of, you know, my Amuna Bitachon work. I was really getting tired of writing feature articles. I used to tell everyone, if you ever see me writing a feature article, that means I need the money, you know, because I hate writing them with a passion. And there came a point where I was writing one. I was like, you know what? I told myself, I was like, I'm never doing this again. I really don't enjoy the process. Feature articles are not for me. You know, I was like, I'm not doing it. And he's like, fine, don't do it. He's like, well, what? I was like, you know, but in my head, I'm thinking like, how could I say no? So after I said, I'm not doing this, of course, they asked me to write a feature article and it was a really, really, really easy one. It was like literally a local interview, super easy topic to write about. could have been done chick chock. And I'm like, the question of like, should I not? Should I break my rule? Whatever it is, like, you know what? I'm not doing it. I said no. And of course, in my head, I'm still thinking like, well, there goes that much money, you know, that I could have easily made. And literally, like a couple days later, I got, texting with a friend who asked me to go speak at a Shabbaton, paying me the same exact amount. And I had a speech that I had already given somewhere else. So I was able to just tweak it a little bit. And I love speaking and presenting. So it was like, I got money in the way that worked for me, in a way, you know, and it happens all the time. You can turn around and see, you know, once you're in it, you see it. I sound so reticent-y. I know, I'm so sorry. but it's when you're doing it, you see it.
Yeah. I talk a lot with clients about this aspect of like the pre-decision anxiety, and being in decision-making phase mm-hmm. is not conducive to growth or expansiveness or anything that you want. So it's like almost better to make the wrong decision than to prolong making the decision.
For sure.
And I never thought of it this way, but bitachon is the best tool to have in your toolbox to make that happen.
Yes, definitely. Because like I said, make your values, it aligns, it doesn't align, your decision is there, and you have that confidence of like, it's going to work out anyway. Something I see that keeps coming up, you know, as I'm going through Chavos Halvavos, is the idea of, you know, his approach to free will, which is more limited. And it's not so much of what you choose to do, you know, whatever's meant to be, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But it's more of the question of who will you become in the process? Who do you become? What kind of if you're sitting there indecisions and you end up lashing out at your kids or your spouse because you're so frustrated and you're so fakacht and whatever it is you're trying to figure out, even if you make that huge deal, even if you do a fantastic job, do you like the person who you are, the person who made that decision? And it really is all about who you are within that process. And when you flip it and realize that it's not about the results, because the results are completely out of your hands. The only thing that you have control over is really the decision-making process and how you go about doing that, because you have no control over whether you're going to succeed or fail, or whether the client's going to like your work or not, whether that deal is going to go through or whatever it is. You have no control over that. That's completely entirely up to Hashem. But the part that you do have control over, which I don't think most people realize, is that decision-making part of how you act, how you think, how you engage in the world in that stage of uncertainty.
Is so good. I always say, like, the LifeWorks motto is there is so much you can't control, and we owe it to ourselves to take control of that which we can, because I see so many women like feeling so disempowered, right? Like, I can't have work-life mm-hmm. balance is not a thing, you know, and like all these disempowering statements. And I'm always like, but you can always control how you feel. So you can always choose to feel imbalanced no matter right. how wacky your life is. You can always choose to not feel overwhelmed no matter how overwhelming your circumstances are. And this is just so aligned and is so fun to talk about. Esther, right. you shared. Yeah.
Now, I'm just thinking of like, you know, you go onto LinkedIn and the hustle culture is, you know, first you have like the huge hustle culture, then the other people are like, you don't have to do the hustle culture. But even the people who are like the anti-hustle culture, even them, they're like, you know, it doesn't feel right. And I was never really sure how I felt about the hustle culture. Like I knew I didn't want to put all that work in because I didn't have the time or space to do that. Hustle culture wasn't available to me because I have kids. You can't, how hard can you hustle with kids and actually, you know, keep your kids? But once I started doing the Chavos Halvavos, I'm like, hustle culture, just, it's not a Jewish concept. It's really not. Like, if you're pushing hustle culture and you're from, you're not understanding Hishtadlus. You're not understanding your, you know, the whole thing is, you know, the Chavos Halvavos keeps on saying is that you, yes, you have to put in Hishtadlus and you have to do your work. But the whole point of your job is really just to say that you did your job and not so much. And the ultimate goal is that to have Menuchas HaNefesh and to be able to do your Avodas Hashem. And that you actually shouldn't be looking for a job that engages you too much, because then you won't have time to focus on your Avodas Hashem. So gave me that clarity of like, oh, now I know why I hate hustle culture. Not just because I can't do it, because it really doesn't align at all.
Right. Wow. So you shared that you were coming from this place where these happily ever after bitachon stories didn't resonate. And then you shared some of your own personal happily ever yeah. after bitachon stories. What changed for you?
Yes. Okay. So it's nothing's changed. And I still, when I see the happily ever after stories, when my kids come home with these stories, because they all the schools peddle these stories, I always point out, you know, kind of poke holes in my kids, you know, little bubbles. I know I sound so mean and so terrible, but it's being like the things I'm sharing with you that are happily ever after, they're small goals, small picture things. I'm not sharing with you other huge struggles that I'm having in my life right now, but it gives me a sense of, this is going to sound so messed up. I have like, I'm one of those people, I have a huge overactive imagination and I can very easily just like doom scroll in my head, all the worst case scenarios. And I have this huge fear of fire, of having a fire in my home. It's a huge fear of mine. And unfortunately, in Passaic, it's really, really common. There are a lot of house fires. I think the houses are just really, really old. And I was thinking one day and I was like, you know, I was thinking like, I'm doing all this bitachon work and I'm thinking like, but what if something like this happens? You know, what? And I'm trying to like almost test myself how I would feel emotionally. And part of me, like, you know, in my brain, I resisted the idea for a while. I was like, no, I can't handle it. It will be the worst thing. Da, 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 da. And then there was a moment where like, it finally just like clicked. I'm like, if it happens, it happens. And it just kind of like, just it let go. You know, I don't know what's going to be. I don't know what's going to be. But now I'm not double checking everything a million and a half times. I was one of those people that I'm busy, you know, double checking the lock and making sure everything's off and every weird smell. I remember like when I had COVID, it's like 2 years ago, I had it in my head that the gas was leaking somewhere and I'm having my husband smell. And I'm you know, like that paranoia we sometimes do to ourselves. This is where actually a lot of like these small, we don't think about these things about put bitachon in context of like our narishkeit, but this is really where a lot of bitachon work comes in. How many times am I double checking the lock? How many times am I double checking that I turned off the whatever it is? It gives you that sense of like, and do I want a fire? For shalom. Like, yeah, this is crazy talk here. I know that. But I'm breathing, you know, I still don't know what's going to be. But I feel that like it gives me a sense of calm about the future, about whatever comes, it's okay. It may be horrible, but it's still okay. And I'll deal with it when it comes instead of borrowing problems from the future. I'm one of those people, I'm borrowing every problem from the future. I'm always borrowing problems from the future. It's my favorite thing to do. You know, I can figure out all the different alternatives, different way I'll react. Who's going to say what? What's going on? I'm very good at doing that. Maybe it's part of my storytelling. I don't know. But it helps me with that day-to-day anxiety that we don't even realize sometimes we're carrying around with us as mothers, as business owners, that there's so many like, what if this? What if that? And if it happens, it'll be okay. And sometimes the worst does come to pass. And we're still here. And we're still fine. And we still don't know. And that's okay. Just because I shared a few happy stories with you, you know, sometimes we need a little catnip to get us into the idea. But once you're actually sitting there doing the work, you realize how much it's changed everything else in your life. And that you don't need the happily ever after story. You don't even have to have a story to quote unquote inspire you. Because you're just living your life in a different plane of existence in a way. So yeah, take away all my happily ever after stories. Nix them, you know, like, because, you know, you're right. It does take away a little bit from the point that I'm trying to make, because it's not about happily ever after stories at all. It's really not. It's about living and walking every day with Hashem and really feeling that comfort. Because, like I said, I have a healthy amount of Yiddish Shemama anxiety, or maybe unhealthy, I don't know. But it really, it helps tremendously.
It's like you said, it's about the person you become.
Yes, exactly. You know, even something, you know, like burning supper, the kids spilling, you know, or the kids messing something up, even though you told them not to touch it, you know, like it gives you that space to calm down as a parent, even. It really gives you that clarity, that calmness. It really is transformative if you let it transform you. Thing is, I think, especially for myself, I'm very skeptical. You kind of like, it's like, okay, I'm sitting here, I'm listening, I'm doing the work, or you think you're doing the work, but you're kind of like waiting for things to happen. And it's like, no. You can't wait and watch for things to happen. You need to take that leap, walk with it, and then you'll see everything change. But you have to actually engage with the work. You can't just stick with it on an intellectual level. You have to let it seep emotionally, which is why I think it's something that needs to be done daily, because you need that, especially someone who's more of that intellectual approach like me, where you need to like constantly be knocking away at that logic in your brain saying, this is not how it works. You know, maybe other people work differently, so they don't need such, you know, high daily doses that I need, but it works like that.
So powerful. Esther, I'm curious, what was something that before you started learning Clovis Halvos, you thought you knew, and then once you started learning, you realized you had not known all along?
Literally everything. Like I said before, I thought it was all about just believe. Just believe. I didn't realize what the belief was predicated on, that the belief is literally like the last stage. And the Clovis Halvos gives you all these understandings of how Hashem works, why he works, what does it mean to trust someone? What does it mean to trust someone unconditionally? I didn't understand any of it at all. And now I have a much greater understanding of when people, like there's a big movement these days, which I think in some ways is beautiful and in some ways it bothers me, where all this like, thank you, Hashem, these kind of things, and people putting these little inspirational things on their WhatsApp status. And I think they're beautiful in the sense that I like the idea of that we're trying and this is a value that we have and that we want to achieve. But if you haven't done the work, then your thank you, Hashem, is very surface level. It's very often is very self-serving. It's very often like, what can Hashem do for me? Versus we're in this together. We're in a relationship and really recognizing everything that Hashem has done for you. That when you're sitting and doing the Clovis Halvos, or really any Emunah Bitachon Sefer, and when you come across these inspirational quotes, they mean so much more to you because you have so much more of that foundational. It's almost like you think of like the iceberg, like the inspirational quote is that tip of the iceberg. And when you see it, it reminds you of all the work that's done underneath. But if you've only done, if you've never done the work underneath, then all you have is a tiny little bit of ice that doesn't really mean anything. On one hand, like I like that we, as a society, as a firm society, we are trying to become more mindful of these things. But I feel like a lot of us are missing that really deeper work that will really transform and really make it meaningful as opposed to the shallow, thank you, Hashem, because it's missing something. Sorry.
That iceberg analogy is so, like, just such a great visual. So incredible, Esther. I want to ask a question, but I'm scared to ask this question, but you're the right person to ask this question to. So.
Okay. Now that we've geared up and I'm going to like hold my breath. Yes.
You're talking to business owners.
Yeah.
They talk all the time about hishtadlus versus bitachon. Mm-hmm. How much hishtadlus, how much bitachon. I'll share my, like I said, I really don't feel qualified, but my unqualified thought, which is I don't understand the question of hishtadlus versus bitachon, because it's not like out of 100%, it will be 60% hishtadlus and 40% bitachon, because we know you need 100% bitachon, and then you also need hishtadlus. But I'm phrasing the question that way because that's how I've heard it talked about. And like, what is the answer?
Okay, so number one, non-nervous in here, totally unqualified to answer this question. But my understanding of things is, so another idea that the Clovis Halvos talks about a lot is that the way that you relate to Hashem is the way that he relates to you. Okay, that if you're going to do a token, I believe in Hashem, then Hashem will just allow you to, whatever happens to you, to happen as a natural course, so that you will just be an average, mean, and statistic. So if, meaning to say that if you put in a crazy amount of effort, right, then you will reap those rewards because that is the way the natural world is set up, that if you put in effort, you will receive whatever it is that you put in. Okay, so you can see people who use in hustle culture, and you see they're reaping all those rewards because that is how they relate to Hashem. Okay. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be on that level. You don't want to be a statistic according to Hashem. That's a horrible place to be. For more on this, there's Arkiva Tatz has a whole shir and he has discussed it in his books. By the way, I'm a huge Arkiva Tatz fan. A lot of the work that I do is so much of my foundations are on his teachings. So there's a lot that he talks about over here, and how we relate to Hashem and Hishtadlis. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to be a statistic. The place where most of us end up falling in is like, we believe, but we're trying. And Hashem is like, okay, I see you. I'm with you. So in that case, you know, Hashem will sometimes, we'll put in a ton of effort and we'll see zero results. We'll be like, oh, that was for nothing. Well, where did Hashem go? And it's like, no, Hashem is showing you that you don't need all that effort. You need Hashem. Sometimes we think when we put in all the hishtadlus, we're nudging Hashem out. And Hashem is really saying like, no, you know, you got it wrong, Shefala. And he's giving you an opportunity to connect with him and saying, make me a partner in your business, and then we'll do this together. So you know, you need to find out where is your relationship with Hashem? Because the way you relate to Hashem is how he relates to you. You have these huge gedolim who do these minutia havishtablas and they see huge results because that's where they're holding. I'm not there yet. But I'm trying, and I'm trying to raise that awareness and consciousness within myself at all times. So what I usually end up doing, this is a thing, is like, I do something to the point that it feels like I'm doing the job. And when I start feeling that push of frustration and that resentfulness of this is not working, I say, I'm done because I don't want this. I don't like the person I'm turning into at this point. Mm. You know, I don't like the way what this process is doing to me. So Hashem, I did my part. I'm showing you, this is what I want to do. This is what my visions, my values, whatever it is. And I'm going to see what you will send my way. And I find for the most part, it works. We'll see what happens when my kids get to Shidduchim. But yeah, I think you need to really, that balance of Hishtadlus and Bitachon, I don't know if balance is the right word, but it's a very, very personal thing that you need to figure out for yourself and figure out your relationship with Hashem and where you're going and what you're trying to achieve. It's something you need to figure out for yourself. But I think when you go back to the principles, if you go look at Rav Yitatz's books or his shiurim or other things like that, when they really, really talk about the ways of relating to Hashem and how Hashem relates to you, you can get a better foundational, which, like I said, I'm not qualified to talk about it. So I'm not, like, even though I know the ideas, I'm like, I'm not going to start talking about, you know, this king and that king. I'm not going there. But do the work for yourself and you'll be able to find your own relationship. And obviously, I think sometimes I remember this line from Brené Brown, which, by the way, also a huge fan of Brené Brown. So she talks about the idea of authenticity, and she says, people think that people are either authentic or not authentic. And she's like, no. Authentic is something you constantly choosing to do. It's not an either or. It's some days I am more authentic and some days I don't make the best choices and I let whatever it is getting in the way. And I feel like Bitachon is the same exact way. You know, some days I am there, you know, and I feel it. And some days I'm just like, this is, you know, whatever. And that doesn't mean that I'm not Balas Bitachon. That means today is just not my day. And, you know, and then next second I could be doing better. There are stories of other Gedolim who share the same exact concept where it's not either or. It's not binary. It's a constant continuum, something that we constantly need to work on and focus on at all times. So, and I think that's not, when you realize that, it takes away some of the judgment that we have upon ourselves sometimes. It's like, oh, well, I messed up there. So therefore I must be that. It's like, no. I made a bad decision now. I had poor thinking, I had poor emotions, whatever it is that you're judging yourself for. And now I'm here in this moment. I think when you do more of your tough work, it allows you to be a lot more present in your life and constantly work from where you are at the moment instead of judging yourself in the past and predicting yourself in the future. You get to just work from where you are at the moment. I don't know if I answered your question at all.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how I try to navigate it.
So really, so powerful. I want to end by asking you what I ask all of our guests, but with you, I have a caveat. You cannot say to find and subscribe to your podcast because to say that.
Oh, okay.
What I want this to be like really practical. What is that actionable takeaway that you are challenging listeners to do, an action they're going to take right now?
Okay. Just sit down for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, make a dream list of your values, of what you want, and what you hope for. Not even necessarily of like, oh, I want to be making X amount of dollars. It's not necessarily concrete business goals, but who do you want to be? I want to give excellent customer service. I want to navigate great onboarding, you know, something more experiential. Mm-hmm. I want to be a very present mother. I want to be able to, you know, plan my supper, whatever, something like that. What are your values? So when you come up to these situations where something's always going to clash with your values or you're always going to have competing values, you already have something concrete. I think sometimes in our head, we have a list of values. And I think having a concrete list of values, especially when it comes to this sort of thing, can be very, very valuable. So having a clear set of values for yourself, I think that could be very, very helpful in guiding you and making better emunah bitachon-based decisions in your life.
Incredible. Esther, if listeners want to find you, follow you, which like I said, I'm leaving off with that as like the next step, where can they do that?
Okay, so they can follow me on most podcasting platforms like Spotify and Apple. They can also, if you click on Spotify, you can see in this descriptions, you can join a WhatsApp group. In the WhatsApp group, you'll get also the videos. I also have an Instagram account where I post all the videos too. So you basically, you have your options of WhatsApp, Instagram, and Spotify that you can go to, or just Google Amuna Fernand-Reperson. Something should show up.
And I'll put links in the show notes.
There you go. And if you have any trouble, just reach out to me. Not a problem. Amuna4nr@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Esther. This was like
my biggest pleasure.
A topic we had to get to, and I'm just so, so happy you came on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. As always, head to lifeworkspodcast.com because that's where the party's at. Drop a comment, #ILifeWorked, on this episode to let our community know that you took the challenge and encourage others to do the same. If you want to hear more about what I do for mompreneurs and how we can work together, reach out, Hannah@lifeworkspodcast.com. Wishing you a day of work and life that work to bring you tremendous fulfillment and joy. Till next time, I'll see you here. And again, thanks for being a part of our incredible community.